On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina.
Everybody, I'm here with David Robertson of the Arizona Diamondbacks organization. David, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Well, I'm entering my third year with the Diamondbacks. This year, I'll be serving our high affiliate up in Hillsboro, Oregon. So I'm excited for that. And thank you very much for having me on here, man.
No, I appreciate you coming on, and I'm excited to hear your path and your journey. Like I said off camera, I was talking to one of the guys you work with, and he said you got a very unique path and very unique journey. So I'm excited to dive into that. And yeah, I think with that, like I want to hear about your path, man.
Yeah, it's definitely unconventional. You know, if you remember back a few years ago, there was a movie, I think it was called The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Well, I was the 45-year-old rookie. So if you're doing the math right now, that's 47 years old sitting here. So my journey is not going to be conventional in any shape, form, or fashion, starting with my birth, actually. So I was born in Huntington, West Virginia, and didn't stick around there very long, and moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee, stayed there till I entered high school, and moved to Stockbridge, Georgia. After I graduated high school, I thought I was going to be a baseball player. Went back up to Chattanooga to pursue a little junior college baseball, and it didn't take me very long to realize that at the college level, regardless if it's junior college or what division, that those coaches don't put up with a little smart mouth punk. So I was very short-lived there, and I found myself walking into the U.S. Army recruiting depot. I walked in there, said, "Hey, what kind of jobs you guys got?" And they started asking me what I had been doing, and I said I was playing a little college baseball. And like, "Well, we got a job for you, so let's go throw you out of airplanes and all that good stuff." So I enlisted and served on active duty for 7 years. Once I got done with active duty, I came back home. And when I got back home, I had, when I was in high school, I umpired Little League Baseball for like on the weekends to earn some money. And man, I would work all day long and start at like 8 o'clock in the morning with 5 and 6 year olds and end at 8 o'clock at night with 11 and 12. And I just thought I was rolling in the dough. So when I got back from active duty the first time, the guy that did all the booking and the assigning agent, I guess is what they call him, he found out I was back home, small town. And he's like, "Man, you want to make some extra money?" So I went in and started doing that again. And he had another guy that was working for him that had went to umpire school down at Harry Wendelstadt's in Ormond Beach. And I didn't have any idea what umpire school. And it's like, "Yeah, you can, that's how you become a major league umpire and all this stuff." And I was like, "Well, shoot, man, I love the game of baseball. Let's train me up." So I started framing houses with a buddy of mine during the day, and I would umpire whatever age group I had a game that night. And all along, this guy was like training me up. So I was saving up all my money, and I paid to go to Harry Wendelstadt's. And when I got down there, it was really cool. You know, it was a really good experience to see and learning how all that works. So if you're like in the top 15 or 20 guys out of the school, then you get selected and you go to a evaluation course, they call it. So there's two different umpire schools. So one school would send, you know, 15, 20, and then the other one would send 15 to 20. So you got, you know, 30, 40 guys there competing for ever how many jobs that minor league baseball has open for that cycle year. So we get down there, and really cool experience. Again, you know, you're umpiring all these summer league games that are down there for college. And I was fortunate enough to get selected there and got a contract. So I got into pro ball as an umpire. So I spent 5 years doing that. Worked in the Gulf Coast League, the Appalachian League, the South Atlantic League, the Florida State League, and the Southern League. And I was down in Jacksonville, Florida. Pitcher and catcher who will remain nameless, both of them ended up in the big leagues, got crossed up, and I took 97 miles an hour right between the eyes. My claim to fame on that is I didn't go out. I woke up before I hit the ground and stuck my hand down. I caught myself. But I had a little bit of swelling on my brain and had to go through all that mess. And, you know, it was like, at that point, it was like a risk reward, you know, it was like, all right, big leagues, heck yeah, man. I want to be there. I want to do it. You know, I'm doing really well. I was promoted faster than the years. Yeah, I mean, I was doing really good. They were ranking everybody. I was in the top three every year that I was there. I got to work instructs. I was doing, you know, fall league stuff. And I was loving it. And it just got to a point where they started talking Parkinson's, and which is hilarious now. And you'll see why it's funny later on. But, you know, I decided to hang it up. And so I didn't know what to do then. So I was like, talked to one of the guys who was athletic director that coached me in football growing up at a local high school. So he was like, yeah, man. He's like, get a teaching certificate and become a teacher and coach. We'd love to have you here. So I go in, get a provisional, I start coaching football, coach baseball. All this time I'm still in the National Guard and reserves, and I still hadn't finished my degree yet. So just doing all kinds of crazy stuff backwards. Right. So I get my degree. Then I go to the teaching alternate preparation program. So I get my teaching license. I get my teaching license. I'm coaching football. I'm coaching baseball. I'm loving it. I get commissioned in the reserve as an officer. Once I finish my degree. I finished my degree from Clayton State University in integrative studies. So, I didn't quite take underwater basket weaving, but I took, you know, the equivalent to that. But it was a degree nonetheless. From there, I went and got my master's degree from the University of Alabama in health. So I'm getting into the weight room with the football guys, and I'm loving it. I've always worked out myself, you know, and I keep coaching. Very fortunate to be a part of some really good programs. My military career is still going. I'm deploying here and there. We played for a state championship, and I got the opportunity to go back on active duty. And anytime I would be presented with an opportunity to serve, I was jumping at it. So I was deployed a lot. So I left the school. I went back on active duty. And in 2012, I was injured to a point where I had to medically retire from both the reserve and active duty. So my military career was done. During that rehab process, I met what we call now a tactical strength coach, or a TSAC strength coach. And they weren't referred to as that back then. I really, truly don't know what this guy's actual title was, but he was just like, man, you need to get into strength and conditioning. He's like, man, you know, good shape, you know, because we were talking, you know, programming and all that stuff. And he told me about the NSCA and the CSCS and all that stuff. And so I came back and I started researching all that. And one thing about me is when I'm in, I'm all in, you know. So it wasn't a half foot in, you know, halfway in, halfway out. It was, I'm going in there, I'm diving in, I'll fall flat on my face, but I'm going to get back up and keep rolling. So I went back to coaching and teaching and started researching all that and got my CSCS. And I found the National High School Strength Coach Association. Started researching them and got really involved with them and put me on their advisory board for the state of Georgia. And in 2019, they have, which is the coolest thing ever, and they need to bring it back because I would still go to it to this day. They had continuing education cruise. So my wife and I, we went on this cruise, and it was really cool setup. It was like 4 or 5 days. I can't remember, but it was like you would go and sit and guys would present, you know, for three or four hours in the morning, and then you'd go chill and then you'd come back. I mean, it was great. I was in heaven. I'm learning strength and conditioning. I'm getting to network with guys and I have a beer, you know. You can't beat that, man. I mean, that's just, but on that trip, I met a guy that had just accepted a position in the Braves organization. Didn't even know that there were strength and conditioning coaches in professional baseball, man. That had no idea. When I was umpiring, you know, I would walk through these facilities and guys would be in there lifting. There wasn't a coach in there. You know, and as far as I know, the trainer kind of had dual roles. I had no idea there was such a thing. So now, you know, I'm back. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm telling my wife, I got to check on this. This is it. So again, you know, going all in, can't half tail do anything, you know? So I'm all in. I'm digging on that. I find you, and this is where things come full circle for me. I'm not done yet because I still think the big leagues are in my future. I'm not completely finished by no means. But being on this podcast with you today, man, is like things kind of come in full circle for me. I found your podcast. I started listening to it. I had a 40-minute drive to work every day. So I learned through a book that I had read, the CEO Strength Coach or something, that you can listen to podcasts on time and a half and you can double your intake. All right. So I was getting, but your time. So about the standard time that you do, I was getting almost 2 episodes in on my way to work. And then I would finish that one and get another one in on my way home every day. So it was freaking phenomenal. All right. So I was listening to one, and you did it with Taylor Hazlinger with the Blue Jays. And he mentions the NHSSCA. And I was like, uh-oh. All right, here we go. So he gave his email out at the end of the podcast. And I couldn't get to my office fast enough. I emailed him and I was like, hey, man, I introduced myself. I'm interested in it. You know, if you got any time, I'd love to talk to you. We spent, I don't know, hour and a half, 2 hours on the phone, just him coaching me up and answering my questions and all this stuff. And it really cool. I actually got to meet him face to face in San Antonio this year. Since that call, hadn't talked to him, hadn't even got to tell him I was in pro ball. It was really cool because we were at the RSCC reception. And a couple of guys from our org and me are just standing there and he walks by and he has his name tag on. I was like, I know that name. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I went up to him and I was like, hey man, remember me? It was a really cool moment, man. It just goes to show you how cool this whole thing is that we do. But so I talked to him, you know, full circle with you on this podcast. And my wife surprised me the summer of 19 with tickets to the College World Series in Omaha, something on my bucket list. I've always wanted to do it. So through the NHSSCA, again, another contact that I met was buddies with Blaine Kinsley, who's the head strength coach for Arkansas. Arkansas is playing in the World Series. We connect, we meet for breakfast one day. Coolest thing ever. I mean, this guy's playing in the College World Series. He takes his time out away to come eat breakfast with some dude he doesn't know. You know, he sits there. He tells me his background, pro baseball again. All right. So I'm like, holy cow. He introduced me to Jim Malone. And it just, you know, it goes there. So as soon as I dropped him back off at his hotel, I told my wife, I'm getting a job in professional baseball. I don't know how I got to do it. I'm going to do it. They will have to tell me no a million times over. I'm going to get one. And man, I found the job boards and all that stuff. And I was just sending resumes out. And I could only imagine what those coordinators and those guys that are getting those resumes are saying, like, who is this freaking old man? I'm like, what is this guy doing, man? He's having some midlife crisis so I don't have any idea how the Diamondbacks thing came about. I'm assuming I sent a resume somehow. And I had the University of Georgia had an internship, unpaid internship. So I was like, hey, I want to do that. You know, so I was just thinking, start moving up the ladder, high school, then we go to college and then maybe, get that on my resume. Maybe that'll help. So, Blaine at Arkansas got in touch with Gearhart, at Georgia, And I did a couple interviews and they were just like, dude, what are you doing? You're going to leave a paying job to come over here to be. And I'm like, well, I want to go to pro ball. If I got to do this, then this is what I'm going to do. And so Ryan Gearhart was the coolest thing ever, man. He said, look, I said, I think we can both help each other out. You don't leave your job. You keep your full-time job. We lift in the evenings over here for baseball. You just come over here and just be free labor. And I was like, I'm on it. Heck yeah. So we get that. I do that all through Thanksgiving, about the beginning of November of 19. I'll go get all the way through there. Like a week before school gets out for Christmas holiday, a guy from the Diamondbacks calls. And apparently I had sent a resume for a Dominican coordinator. And so I talked to him, and then another guy calls and I talked to him, and then all of a sudden radio waves go silent. I hear nothing. So I go to the NSCA in January. While I'm sitting there, Georgia has a full-time position come open and they ask me if I want it. And I take it right then. I'm like, heck yeah, I'll do it. So I took that full-time job. I come back, I told my high school I was working at that I'd be leaving at the end of January, I think it was. Well, as soon as I go in for my very first day at the University of Georgia, I get a call from the Diamondbacks and start there. They have an affiliate position open. I go through that process, lasts another week or so, a lot of phone calls, a lot of interviews. They offer me the job. Nate Shaw calls, says, do you want it? Yes, sir, I do. Thank the good Lord I'm in pro baseball. So that would be 45 years old in rookie ball. There it is.
So I knew the military thing, not to the extent that you've explained, but I knew you had military background. I didn't know the umpiring. I didn't know that the podcast helped you. And so I have I'm super intrigued. Like, there's a ton of ways we could take this. First, like, obviously, thank you for the support of the podcast. And I think my story was I had heard Carlo Alvarez speak on the Elite FTS podcast, and that was when he was with the Pirates. And I was like, I want to get into pro ball. And then oddly enough, he's actually the first person to hire me in pro ball. And so when I brought this podcast to the board of the PBSCCS, that was kind of my thought process was like, hey, if somebody listens to this podcast that's not in pro ball and it, sparks their interest to get in, and then we can get good people and good coaches in from listening to this, like, that's a win for me. And it gives the coaches that are already in a platform to speak. So it's super cool that it actually like has worked out for somebody. So I'm obviously got a big smile about that too. But let's talk so how does your background and your age as well, like between umpiring and military, like, do you think that's helped you in professional baseball? Do you think it's hurt you? And like, how has it just made your experience different than maybe like the 20-year-old who's a rookie ball coach? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think it starts with my unique perspective of life, man. Unfortunately, I've seen some of the worst of what this world has to offer. And, it has, I've learned to use that as a positive and not a negative. So, I keep things light. I'm serious when we need to be serious, and I'm going to have a good time doing it. You know, I think in pro ball that helps, you know, with the adversity that I've faced with my background, that I can help these players out with that, maybe from more so a mental skills aspect than say a traditional strength and conditioning. Definitely my ability to adapt. Adaptability is huge in the military, huge in baseball. Doesn't, you know, things change, you know, daily, sometimes hourly, you know. And, you know, probably the most important thing is just the ability to develop those relationships with a wide variety of people from different cultural backgrounds, from, you know, just different socioeconomical backgrounds, just being able to connect with all God's creatures, if you will. You know, it has happened through, you know, just the maturity that you have, making it as far as I have, thank the good Lord. And, you know, my being a teacher and a coach at a lower level, man, that's the hardest ones to do. You know, I think the higher up we move, the easier it becomes, because, you know, guys kind of get it. Whereas, you know, at the lower levels, you got to coach, man. And, you know, I learned that high school background, I learned to differentiate the instruction to give to those guys. And that helps with the players that we have now in the organization, because, you know, they're all different, you know. So I can, within a little bit of time, you know, my coach's eye is not a 20-year-old coach's eye. It's a 47-year-old coach's eye. So the time that I can take to differentiate that instruction for that player, you know, it is probably a little quicker than a 20-year-old. That's been helpful. And, you know, another one that stands out is just being able to lead, man. Be able to lead and know when to lead, and when to follow. You know, that was probably the toughest thing my first year was, you know, I've always been brought up that, you know, that rookie keeps his mouth shut. Well, the D-backs, they wanted me to talk. They wanted to learn, you know, they respected my experience, and they wanted, and I loved it, you know, because they wanted me to speak up. They wanted to hear, you know, what my thought process was on certain things. And I, by far, my biological age is up there, but my training age, as far as the strength and conditioning coach in professional baseball, is not very high, you know. So it was learning and being mature enough to balance that, lead those young guys, but also know that when I'm in that minor league training office, that I'm the oldest person in there, you know, and so that I need to let the leaders lead. My time will come, good Lord willing. You know, if my input is asked, then I give it. And I think that my background has allowed me to mature and to know the difference between that and, you know, not the annoying rookie that thinks he knows everything. You know, I want to be the humble guy that's 47 years old, but man, I'm still learning, and I want to be a dang sponge. I want to learn from all you young guys, you know. So I think that's probably the biggest things that stand out as far as my background. But I think we could probably have a whole podcast on that, man, because, you know, I think all of our experiences are unique, and I don't think we get to any point in life without being prepared for that next part. You know, a door closes here, another one opens here, and I don't think that happens until you're prepared.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I really love that. That's something that I kind of live my life by, is just prepare as much as you can for the next role, and when you're ready for it, like, life will present it to you. And when it does, you can't miss that opportunity. So, and then the other thing is, like, you talk about life experience, and that's, as I've grown up in professional baseball, for me, like, seeing other players with life experience has kind of changed who I am as a man. Is like, I was 22 years old in Double A, And I look back on it now and I was like, if I was just 25, 26, 27, like my whole perspective of working with those guys would have changed. And like, I've kind of grown up and moved through the system as like other guys are. So like some of those guys I've kind of moved up with as well, but like I was 29 in my first year in the big leagues this year. Right. So like, I think about, you know, in 5-6 years when I'm 35, you know, if I'm still around, I'll have a whole different perspective on that, because I'll have some years under my belt. I'll have some age under my belt. Maybe my wife and I will have children. Maybe we won't. But like, I didn't know what I didn't know at that time because of my age, where I think for you, that's actually probably a huge benefit. And I think like working with those younger kids is a great place for somebody like yourself, where you can teach them life lessons and you can kind of give them a look into the future. Like, hey, you think you're a hotshot now at 18, like you're in rookie ball, like you need to do these things and get your life in order so that when you move up, like things just get easier, right? Like a lot of it is, like you said, it gets easier when you move up because they're more mature, they have a better life age. And then if we can help them take care of what they need to take care of and create a little discipline in their routine and things like that, the rest of that stuff's going to, you know, kind of come naturally as they age. So I'm glad that like after all that time and like you find out you're, you know, there's pro ball strength coaches that like you get the chance to. And, you know, I think some people might say, well, you're too old or whatever. But for me, like I said, this is the perfect age for you. Like if life wanted you to be here at this time, like you're here at this time for a reason. So it's cool to hear your story and you know, how you can leverage that with your players. And then the other thing that I have to ask you about is like, when you watch a game, like how upset are you with the umpires?
Yeah. You know, I try to stay out of that. And, you know, a lot of our coaches in the ACL this past season, they knew my background and one of our hitting coaches, you know, he was a catcher and, you know, he would get fired up and he'd just look at me, you know, and I'm just like, man, I don't want to bash those guys by no means, because I haven't walked a foot in their shoes now, but they walk around at that rookie level. I don't know that I could do it, because they have pretty big chips on their shoulder right now at that I saw, you know, this year and back when I was coming up through and doing rookie ball and, you know, all the way up through, you know, double A, you know, that they wanted you to be approachable. They wanted you to be, you know, and then neither team could say one word, and it was, you know, their eyes would be in the dugout and all that stuff. So I try to stay out of it. I've shaken my head a whole bunch, you know, but hey, man, it's not as an easy as a job as people think it is, so, you know, so I respect that, but I don't think they need to walk around like, you know, they're God's gift to the game of baseball, because they're not, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I don't envy that position ever, especially the higher you go up, like this guy missed this call and that call. It's like, this guy's throwing 100 and the ball is moving, you know, 12 inches across the plate, and it missed the plate by an inch and a half. Like, and most of the time they're right and they get it right. And I'm like, I don't know how they are so good, and other people, I don't know how they're so bad. So I was just curious, like I would assume like players and coaches know your background. So they're like, hey, what'd you think about that call? And it's like, you know, I really want to keep my mouth shut, but yeah, that one was a bad one.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. I don't comment, you know, I'll watch, or I'll be like, ooh, you know, I'll make a face or something like that. But I keep it to myself, because I know that it's not an easy job by no means.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't even be able to, like, a little league game or, like, you know, a wiffle ball game, be like, is that a strike? I don't know. So I don't envy any of them. And then again, like we said, how much they get just absolutely worn out by the media and things like that, especially at the big league level. It's just such an intense job, and every little call like stands on it. And then you have replay too. So it's like, if they are wrong, like then they're getting called out on it in front of, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions of people, depending on who's watching the game. So it's cool that you were on that path. And it's interesting that like you wanted that big league journey, you wanted that big league dream, and then it was taken away from you, unfortunately. But now you have that dream just in a different environment.
And I think that motivates me. You know, not very many people in life get a second chance. You know, when you're presented with that second chance, you know, you've got to, like you said earlier, you know, you've got to take advantage of it. You know, and my personality's all in anyway, you know, so I'm gonna ride it as long as they'll let me ride it, you know, and I think that I'm here for a reason. You know, like I said, you don't get second chances, and I think it's gonna work out this time. I don't know when.
That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, man, like we said, you just prepare, you do the best you can, and when life's ready, it'll present it to you.
That's it.
So what is your best professional baseball story so far? Either something that makes you laugh or something that makes you smile, or just what is like the most fond thing to look on for you?
I've got several already. And I don't know if I create all this mess or what, but they're hilarious. You know, being in the ACL and being right there in Scottsdale and our big league team being right down the street, you know, I got a lot of rehab guys coming through and all that stuff. So I could tell stories on that all day long. But the best one, the funniest one that just, I mean, it you're probably not going to believe it, but it happened. So I am extended spring training of last season, and I have just been working my tail off to learn Spanish. You know, just got a whole roster full of Latin kids, and I want to communicate with them. I want to learn, you know, I want to be able to, you know, them to have a little bit of respect for me and create that buy-in. And, you know, I'm grinding hard on Spanish, and pitcher gets done morning game. Pitcher gets done. I'm walking him back to the clubhouse. And I tell him in my best Spanish, man, what I thought was go to the clubhouse, change your clothes, and meet me in the weight room. Is what I thought I said. I turned around, I opened the door for him. I turned around, and my guy is standing on the sidewalk, booty buck naked, right there for him in all his glory, standing right there in the sidewalk. What are you doing, my guy? Put your clothes back on. So that is probably the funniest story that I have. But after that, I learned to, that less is more, and, to be as simple with my Spanish as I possibly can. So all that turned into cambio la ropa, después gym. And then I didn't have any problems, but with all the other words, I somehow told him to just strip down right there. And my man did. Holy cow.
So, okay. So you said, I won't believe it. I definitely believe it. We've all had something like that happen with the young Latin kids and I think there is a lesson in that. Like you said, it's like we all get super gung-ho about learning Spanish in baseball because there is such a big population of Latin American players. And we try to like really impress them with like all these words and big full sentences when really like the short, sweet, to the point, like change clothes, gym. Yep. Will like get you the point across. So for anybody that's listening that's younger or trying to learn Spanish, like I myself don't have a specific example, but there's plenty of times where I was like in my head trying to translate the perfect sentence when I could have just thrown a couple words out. And now like I'm good enough to get the point across with my Spanish, but it's not like, I mean, I can have a full conversation if need be, but a lot of it is like short and sweet, like you said. So as funny as it is, there is usually a lesson in the funny things that happen in pro ball. And I would say that's probably the lesson in that one for sure.
No doubt, man. No doubt. Less is more.
Yes. And especially with Spanish. So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Oh man, this one might get me in trouble, but I'm going to be honest. I don't think there's a secret sauce. I think that everything works and everything sucks. You know, I don't think one program is better than the other. I don't think one philosophy is better than the other. I think we got to try to make something work. And while we're trying to make it work, we're actually evaluating to see if it actually works. And then if it does, you know, then, hey, that's a win, you know, because what is the best thing for Chris might not be the best thing for David. What's the best thing for David might not be the best thing for Chris. And I think that goes into, you know, the principles of strength and conditioning are few, but the methods that we get to these principles, or that we utilize these principles, or we enforce these principles, you know, are plenty. You know, it's like the coming into the D-backs, you know, I was coming from a traditional strength and conditioning background, and you know, these guys are kind of unconditional, and man, it makes me more dangerous. I'm learning everything PRI and DNS and all this alphabet soup, man. That's just making me a better strength coach. You know, you can't, I think sometimes as a profession, we get like tunnel vision, and we're all type A personalities where, you know, hey, what we do is the best, you know, what the Red Sox do is the only way to do it. And, you know, not to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's not, you know, it might be the best for this team. You know, next year we might have to back up and punt and reevaluate our philosophy. And, you know, I think that's something that I'm probably in the minority on, you know, that I think guys are like, this is the way to do it, and this is how we need to do it. And you know, that's not necessarily wrong. You know, I can implement a playbook for sure, you know, and I'm open to that. But I think we kind of miss, or we put the athletes in jeopardy, or our players in jeopardy, by saying that this is the only way to help this player, you know, and, you know, when there's 1,000 different ways, we just got to figure out, differentiate what it is that this player needs and give him that. You know, whatever that might be. Hopefully I didn't cause too many hairs to raise up out there, but you know, I think it's true. I think we're all right. I think we're all right, and I think we're all wrong.
I would agree with you completely. And the reality is, for me, there's like two parts to that. Is first, like the way the Red Sox do something, or the way the Diamondbacks do something, or the White Sox, or anybody in baseball, it works for them. Right. But it may not work for another org. And so it's hard to say like who has the best. It's just the best for that in that team's like environment. Right. Like the way they draft players, the way they develop players, the way they coach players, like all of that has to be factored into like what kind of program you're doing. Right. And so for me, like I should be able to give you fully the Red Sox program, and you can say, OK, great. Like, maybe there's a couple of things I'm going to take, but we're not going to redo the whole Diamondbacks program just because the Red Sox do it this way. Right. So that's the first thing for me. And then the other thing is like our head guy and I are actually talking about this now, is like, we have a way that we were implementing things last year that we think works well for our environment, but we could do that same thing this year with this team that we have with this new group of players, and it could be totally wrong. And then we have to, like you said, we have to punt, we have to go back to the drawing board. So the thing that you said that I really like is like, we're implementing, but we're also evaluating if it's working while we're implementing it, right? So we had pretty good success with what we did last year. We really like that. We're going to expand on that a little bit this year, but really we're just going to see like, hey, are we on to something here? If it works again for us this year, then yeah, it probably works within the context of our situation. But that, again, if it works for us, it doesn't mean that it's going to work for the Diamondbacks. The affiliates are in different locations for weather-wise, travel-wise. The players that you're looking to draft are different. The way you coach them is different. Like, there's so many factors that go into it. And I think that's been a big thing in professional baseball, is like there's a lot of, you know, secrets or like competitive advantages. And I think, to be fair, like we should just be able to have open conversations about our programming and our philosophies, and just be able to bounce things off of each other versus like, no, this is the best way, bro. You got to really do it this way if you want your players to get better, because you're going to come back and say, well, we do PRI, DNS. We have really good success with that. So like, why aren't we right? You know? So I agree with you 100%. And maybe we're both in the minority. Maybe we're both crazy, but I think you know, on the surface, I would say a lot of people probably believe like there is no, you know, one true secret thing. But at the same time, they say that and then they say, but my program really works. And it's like, exactly. Well, there's always that caveat there where I think I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, we really need to dive much more than just surface level of, oh, yeah, there's no secrets. Like, okay, but why are there no secrets? Why might this work for us? Why might it not? Like, what different challenges are we having this year? So I couldn't agree with you more, to be honest. And I don't think you're crazy, but maybe somebody else does, and that's okay.
I appreciate that, Chris. Thank you.
What advice do you have for others in the field, either young coaches looking to get into pro ball for the first time or just older coaches who have been around? Like, what advice do you have?
You know, for me, my advice is going to be something that I have to keep reminding myself of. And you know, I like I've already said, you know, my biological age is up there, but my pro ball strength and conditioning age is down, you know, is low. So it's hard for me to give too much advice that I don't need to keep adhering to. And you know, I think it's just every day's a job interview. You know, you never know who you're talking to. You never know who you're going to come across. You can't just do what's required of you. You know, I think all of us work hard. You know, I think that just the hard work or the good work ethic is just your ticket in the door. You know, you got to be able to do and the stuff that's not required or unrequired, if you will, you know. And, you know, my goal has always been and to be the coach that never has to apply for a job. You know, I was fortunate to get to that point in high school athletics in the state of Georgia. And, you know, I fully believe that we can still get to that point in professional baseball. You know, you should be able to come in and do your job at such a high level that everybody in Major League Baseball knows it and wants you to be a part of their culture. And if that's the advice that I keep telling myself, you know, and I think it's good advice. If nothing else, it'll keep me moving forward, if you will. And you know, I think if we all come from that place of every day's a job interview and doing what's not required of me and pushing forward, people are going to want that, you know. And that's some advice that I wish I had received a long time ago, but I had to figure it out kind of on my own when, you know, each school year would be about coming to a close and my phone would start ringing, you know, and I just kind of took that same philosophy everywhere I went, you know. And it's hard just to get in the door, you know. When we talk about some advice for a young guy, you know, look at me, don't stop, you know, 45 years old, people probably laughing at my resume when they get it, you know, who's this, like I said, this old guy having a midlife crisis, wanting to get into pro ball. He has no idea what he's getting into, you know. Just be resilient, you know, relentlessly pursue what it is that you think your goal is or your goal is, you know, and do it at such a level that everybody wants you a part of their organization.
I really, really love that. I really do. And I had a mentor way back when, and he told me, like, my goal was to get to a point where I never needed to update my resume again. And for me, that I was like, I don't really understand. And then now, like, I feel that way, right? Like, at some point I want my work to be so good and so recognized that either the current organization I'm in values it so much that they won't let me go, or somebody else is gonna see it and want me to be a part of their culture. And how you do that, like you said, is you take every day very serious. You take every day as a job interview. And for me, it's like, I try not to take any single day for granted, right? Like, the life that I get to live, you know, the opportunities I have to enjoy time with my wife and the level that I'm at, like, there's never a day where I'm just checking the box, right? Like, every day, even in the off season, I go to Fenway probably four times a week to lift. And I'm like, I'm going to Fenway Park today. You know what I mean? Like, it's something that is not like lost on me. And it's something that I try to consciously wake up every day and like, don't take this day for granted. Like, go in, work your hardest, do what you can, go above and beyond for the guys, go home, reset, and do it again the next day. And some days it's easier than others, and some days it's difficult in professional baseball. You know, the long travel and the season, it's just, it's a grind. But I think if you have that mindset, it doesn't feel like a grind, right? Like, you know, this was my first year in the big leagues, like I said, but I don't think 10 years down the road, if I'm still in the big leagues, like I'm still going to have the same mindset as that first year rookie of like, don't take this day for granted. Don't take this day for granted. And I think, again, you have to just remind yourself that. But yeah, I really love that. I really do. And, you know, the other part of like the young coaches trying to get in, like there are jobs that get posted, but for every job that gets posted, there's hundreds of applicants, you know. And if it's something you really want to do, like, don't be deterred by that. Just keep trying, keep pursuing, keep doing whatever you can. It goes back to a point you made earlier, is like, you had a full-time job that you were going to leave for an internship that paid nothing because you thought that would put you on the path to this job. So it's one thing to just talk about it, but it's another thing to be about it. And like, clearly you're about it. You know, you talk the talk, but you walk the walk. And so that's very admirable. And I really do respect that. And I think that's great advice for the listeners for sure.
Thank you.
So how about continuing ed? Just like books to read, seminars to attend. I know you've mentioned a couple seminars already. Any podcasts you're listening to, just where do you go for your sword sharpening?
Man, I am constantly doing this. I have put myself intentionally behind the eight ball, you know, looking for that competitive advantage, you know, with all these young bucks out there, you know, so I got to, and they're smart. You know, these guys are really, really smart. And, you know, so I got two books, two seminars, and then two podcasts that are my go-to. So the books, Lead for God's Sake by Todd Gongwer. It's a leadership book. It's really good. I actually read it every year. I had an Army chaplain give me the book a few years ago. A lot of years ago now. But he gave it to me when I was going through a pretty rough time with some teammates being lost and some stuff that my team was going through at the time. So it's really good to circle back every year for me. And, you know, it's not like a Bible thumping book or anything like that, but it puts what we do as leaders of men in a perspective to where it's very simple but complex, if that makes sense. And then one I just finished, Why the Best Are the Best by Kevin Eastman. It's really, really good too. He gives you 25 words and he defines them, 25 words that elite people, elite teams, you know, kind of go by, and he defines them from a basketball perspective. He was a longtime NBA basketball coach. Really, really good. Both of those books are super fast reads, but you might get through it fast, but you'll be taking a whole bunch of notes. Really good. Seminars, actually did two this offseason, actually both of them within the last month, and really, really good. The Fascial Distortion Model was really good. Shout out to the Brewers for hosting that 2-day weekend conference with those guys. The instructors were phenomenal. Everybody that I've talked to that's went through this has said that it is the best soft tissue course for strength coaches because it's all quick hitters. It's stuff that we can implement in the weight room right away. And I've actually done it already. So it was probably one of the best decisions I've made as far as Con Ed goes. And then the Functional Range Systems came out with the internal strength model. And a couple of me and another strength coach and one of our trainers went to Cal Berkeley a couple of weeks ago and did their certification they have. So, you know, not to give the course away completely, but if you think about cars and pels and rails, just think about cars and pels and rails with a kettlebell or a band and you got it. So it's pretty interesting. More so training, to use Dr. Spina's words, training the white tissue instead of the color tissue. So he's referring to the connective tissue instead of the muscle belly. So, you know, pretty good. Definitely came back with a lot of good stuff add in my toolbox to help the players for sure. And then the podcast, you know, not taking anything away from this one, because like I said, I feel like I'm coming full circle, and it's a really cool moment to be here with you. But, you know, I've always thought, and all that my mentors have told me, that if you want to be elite, you got to do what elite people do, and you have to study what the elite people do. And there's two podcasts out there, two guys have, Ed Mylett and Tim Ferriss, and both of them have their own, it's the Ed Mylett Show and the Tim Ferriss Show. But what they do is their guests are just like elite performers, or, you know, unique performers. And they all, you cannot listen to a single episode from either one of those guys that you don't take something from. And, you know, we as strength coaches and, you know, we go to so much Con Ed that, you know, you it's hard to find stuff that where you keep getting nuggets from and all that. And, you know, it's so if you get one or two things for each thing that you do, you know, it's a win. But those two podcasts definitely go to, you know, I can't listen to them while I drive because I want to take too many notes.
The seminars sound really interesting. So maybe off camera, we can talk more. I know you said you don't want to give too much away, but maybe just between me and you, you can give some away. But I want to finish this up with a lightning round here. Just making sure you got time, you good, everything's all right?
Absolutely, man. Let's go.
All right, four questions, long or short answers as you want, and then I promise I'll get you out. First one, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I'm not going to go with a specific person. I'm going to say the National High School Strength Coaches Association, by far. Huge influence on where I'm at right now. Forever in debt.
One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Oh, prior to the 2020 COVID, I would have a different answer than I have right now. And this is going to, I mean, again, man, there's nothing, you know, everything about me is kind of unique. So I'm going to say the one piece of equipment to train with is my brain, because, man, I got so creative during COVID, and man, you can get a good workout with just stuff that you have sitting around your house. So you don't need any of that, you know, you got your brain, be creative, baby. Let's go.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
I'm going to go one of each. Personally, by far, my greatest accomplishment is somehow persuading elementary school principal to marry me. I still haven't figured that out yet, but that is by far my greatest accomplishment personally. Professionally, and I'm going to do my best not to tear up right here, but having the honor of serving and fighting alongside of some of the greatest warriors that have ever graced the face of this earth is head and shoulders by far my greatest professional accomplishment. I could go to the big leagues tomorrow, win a World Series in 2022, and it would come close, but it would not top the relationships that I've built with some of the greatest human beings to ever walk the face of the earth. And I get up every day to consciously make an effort to make sure that the ultimate sacrifice that those men and women have given does not go in vain.
Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Farmer.
Really?
Definitely a farmer. I watched my papaw work those cattle, and man, oh man, that would be, there's every single day is an honest living. And, you know, I'm not one shy away from work. So I think that would suit me just fine.
For sure. David, I appreciate your time. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more? Is social media the best place, or is there a better place for it?
I just all of it. I'm not very good at the social media thing, but I have it. And so Twitter is at @coach_robo11. That's R-O-B-O 11. Instagram at @coach_drob11. And then my email is just drobertson@dbacks.com.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and it was really cool to get to know you, man, and hear your story and your path. And I wish you all the best of luck, and just keep chipping away at it, man. And we'll talk soon. All right.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude our episode with David. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was really cool to hear his unique journey and the story that he has. And, you know, he kept saying that he's an older guy in pro ball and he's new to how things work. But I think his life experience really does help him in his position. And I think it'll help him in this game, just being able to connect with players and sharing his life experiences with them. So it was really good to have him on, and there was a ton of really good information in this one. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you took a lot of notes. So three things that I took from David in this episode: know when to lead and when to follow, everything works and everything sucks, and hard work is just your ticket in the door. You need to go above and beyond if you want to advance and get better. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.